Good afternoon. We're back with another episode of the Sean Mo Hoops podcast, coming to you 1 week after Ricky O'Donnell joined pre-All-Star weekend, and now back with Mikey V to talk college basketball as well as Basketball Without Borders, which occurred this weekend. Mikey, how are you doing this week?
Doing very well, Sean. Very excited to hear about your thoughts on Basketball Without Borders. Think it's great that you went there once again.
Yeah, it was lucky that I got to see it, and unfortunately was not there for the Saturday-Sunday, but did at least get out there on Saturday. But before we get into that, I know you just finished watching the Oregon-Arizona State game, and I know every time we talk about Oregon, they're coming off a loss, so don't need to dwell on that. But I am curious about Arizona State and Alonzo Verge. It was 5 years ago, almost to the day, February 18th, where I got to watch him in person for the first time. He was a junior, I believe, at Willowbrook back in the Chicago days, and he dropped 41 in the game I got to watch of him. So I've definitely been tracking him, and I know he's had a very roundabout journey to get back to Division I, but I think he might have had a good game against your guys tonight. So I'm curious to hear you talk about Alonzo Verge.
I don't think might is the right word, Sean. He had a fantastic game against Oregon and was an absolute microwave. Very big in the second half, able to create off the bounce, just took some great angles to the basket, ran really hard, had a number of steals. Like there would be a few plays where Oregon would get a steal and then Arizona State would get the ball right back. And Verge, I think, was at least in a couple of those. And he's had a few games. The first game against Oregon, he did not really do much of anything. He only played 17 minutes, didn't score. This game, he really was a huge reason they maintained the win and kind of just kept going. Oregon eventually did tie the game after being down by double digits through in the first half. And he just has had some very solid scoring moments, including the game against St. Mary's, which is one of the weirdest games this year, where he scored 43 of Arizona State's 56 points and yep. They lost by 40. That is one of the strangest college basketball games I've seen, like in terms of one guy going off and the team still managing to not really back him up at all.
Yeah, I think for him, he's had six games with offensive rating over 100, which I think the thing about him was probably his efficiency, whether it was high school or AAU. So pretty interesting to watch him play. And the Pac-12 has been kind of a toss-up, some good play, not a lot of great play. But I'm curious, if you had to choose right now, who is your pick for the team that will win the Pac-12?
Tournament or conference?
We'll go, who do you think is the best team that will, we'll go the tournament.
I think Colorado has to be up there. Like, even though Oregon did beat them, I think it was just kind of an off game for them. They have a number of nice pieces. They're just like a really solid team. And, Arizona, I think, is kind of found their footing as well, and they're in the mix. So I like, you know, those guys are at the top of the conference for a reason. Arizona State is in there as well. I just think they're a level below, and feel that if Peyton Pritchard hadn't gotten in foul trouble, then they probably would have had a decent chance of winning that one. But just a rough shooting night for the Ducks, and a lot of turnovers, a lot of
No more. I'm not going to keep you in your misery with Oregon. But,
all good. Yeah, sorry, man.
What about UCLA?
I feel they're in there.
UCLA, 7-2 in their last nine.
I know. They're just still a team I have a really hard time getting behind. I just think there's a lot of youth there. And, I know they played really well. I guess I saw them against Oregon, and, you know, I feel like yeah, they're still not a team I really believe in too much. Kind of like you with San Diego State at this point.
funny you bring that up. I did watch them, I think it was last Thursday when they played, and actually, not that I'm a believer in them competing for a championship, but I did actually enjoy watching them play a little more than I thought. I know we talked about Malachi Flynn, but Matt Mitchell was pretty interesting to me given his size and shooting, 6'6", but pretty long and weighs 240 and shooting 40% from behind the three-point line. So I think, you know, I thought he could potentially pose some matchup problems at the four position for San Diego State. So I'm a little more intrigued by them than I was last time we chatted 2 weeks ago, but still not fully bought in. Although it'll be interesting to see, you know, see them in the conference tournament to see how they handle that pressure. In terms of the Pac-12, so you got Colorado, we got a big game, Oregon, Arizona this week that played one of the better games I've seen all year, earlier in the year. So we can chat about that later, but kind of switching topics, basketball without borders. So we had mentioned that at the tip, happened at All-Star Weekend in Chicago, bringing a lot of the top international high school age players into one place to participate in front of a lot of the NBA executives. I'd say about, I don't know, what did you say, about 20% currently play in high school, maybe 15 to 20%. So a lot of them are familiar to the recruiting junkies, but then other ones are coming from, you had China and Australia, Europe, South America, and through the NBA academies. So I was there 2 years ago in LA and got to watch a pretty good event with some high talent. And I wasn't quite as enthusiastic coming out of this one. I only got to watch one day, so my knowledge is not as deep, but I know you've been reading up on it. And I guess I'm curious kind of your thoughts on some of the international guys that were there that you've been tracking for a while.
Yeah, I just, the guy that I hear a lot about, and I know that you kind of highlighted him, was John Montero, who is playing overseas, but he was, I believe last year playing in high school in Florida, plays for the Dominican Republic. Have heard really good things about his ability to create off the dribble, and just kind of wonder what you felt about him and just your take on him as a prospect at the event.
Yeah, well, I only did one tweet on the event, and unfortunately had the Twitter autocorrect on Basketball Without Borders turning into Basketball Without Birders, which got a few a few responses that I couldn't take back because I was talking about Montero. And he was a guy I had kind of on my list to watch, but he wasn't at the top of the list. And going through the drills, you know, he seemed pretty diminutive compared to a lot of the other players, not to mention in the drills he was kind of always second man up. So he, you know, you could see that he was quick, but you didn't really get the full experience. And then how they did it, at least initially, they had the girls on the main court and the two games on the side courts of the guys, and I chose the right side to watch. And he came, I think he came off the bench, and you could tell right away he was one of the quicker players there, so his speed was evident immediately, and had a really nice shot. So he was scoring, getting to the rim, hitting some threes, and just really came to play right from the beginning. So in that little stanza on Saturday morning, he was, I'd say, the main standout for me. Unfortunately, you know, it took him a while. It took the whole session a while to get going, and then you had some slow drills, and then you really only got two games. So it wasn't a whole lot of viewing, but he was probably my top prospect. Although, you know, there's a few other guys that were, you know, probably rated a little above him, and one that got MVP, which I'll probably mispronounce the name. So I might let you do the pronunciation of the MVP.
I think it's Ariel Huckporty, but yeah,
sounds pretty good.
Completely certain. At least that's how it looks when it's on paper. I know he's from Togo, has played in Germany for quite a while. And yeah, he's been involved in German national team play at like I think the U16 level the last little while as well.
Yeah, from a size perspective, really strong, could run the floor, physical, as I mentioned, got MVP. Wasn't fully sold on him on Saturday. I think he could be a good college player if he, was a college guy. But in terms of looking at the pro prospects, not really sure how he fits into the modern NBA. So I wasn't nearly as high on him. But there's a ton of bigs, both from Africa and Canada, that were there. But I think going into it, one of the top rated prospects was, once again, Juhan Bagarin from France, who's a 6'4 point guard and really tall, tall, very physical, good athlete, very deep range on his three, but, got good rotation. I wouldn't say one of the best shooters. When he was missing, it was, pretty long or short or off to the left or right. So he could get to the rim and get fouled, and he could finish above the rim. So his athleticism was evident, but his skill level still thought had a ways to catch up. So knowing that he was one of the top prospects, I'm wondering if you had seen him much before.
I really haven't yet. Just kind of been reading up on him, but yeah, he's definitely going to be somebody I'm tracking because I know he's getting projected as possibly being a 2021 draftee. Any of the Canadian players that stood out to you? Because I know I follow a lot of Canadian basketball, being from Toronto. Have heard very good things about the guys who were there, and know that a lot of them made the all-tournament or all Basketball Without Borders team. So who stood out to you as far as the Canadian guys?
Yeah, I know you do love the Canadians. So Charles Bediako was 1'6", 10". I think you mentioned 7'4" wingspan. So, still thought his skill level could catch up a bit, but he was pretty impressive, pretty athletic, and could get up and down the floor. And then Josh Primo, who was heavily talked about in the ESPN article, caught my eye as one of the better shooting guards that was there. And he recently reclassed into, 2020 class. So he'll be going to college next year, and heard it might be an SEC school. I think, Primo was a guy, 6'5", 6'6", that played well. And then, there's a few other Canadians there, but those were the two that caught my eye from that group. A few other players. One was Josh Giddey from Australia. I'm trying to look at what he was, 6'7" point guard. So good size and had a good handle and kind of a good flair. But he did hit a three when I was watching, but I know that the defenders were playing off of him, and he was pretty slow getting the ball up the court. So he's going to be playing in the Australian Professional League, but I kind of definitely had my concerns about him, although he was fun to watch at times in terms of his style of play. And then another guy, Kai Soto, who was one of the more well-known players, Filipino, 7'2", 210 pound center, that has gotten a lot of attention. And for me, at that height, he was pretty skilled, but kind of, was a stretch five basically, and did not do a lot of, going inside the paint. And, in terms of a skill set, was very high, but didn't come away loving him. So I know he's been mentioned a lot. So curious, any of your thoughts on Soto?
Yeah, I think how popular he has been being. The Philippines love basketball, so having a guy who like has legit, like more than legit size, come and play in the U.S. and then getting some interest from top colleges. From what I have seen from him, I have my concerns as well in terms of his pro prospects. But not like the worst athlete in the world considering his size. and certainly seems to have some touch. So I understand the intrigue there. I just I'm not surprised that he wasn't necessarily one of the top guys there, and think there's still quite a bit of work to do. One player I just kind of was interested to hear how he did, because I really didn't hear a lot about him at this event, was Moussa Diabaté from France. He was number 73, if you remember him at all. I know he's currently ranked 10th in the 2021 class, according to the 247 composite.
Yeah, so he played well. It was a guy, I believe it was at Pango's camp. So he played well. I wouldn't say he stood out, you know, head over shoulders over anyone. But he was definitely impressive and had his moments, especially from a kind of an athleticism piece. But I want to flip it back on you in terms of the other Moussa Sissi, who I didn't get to see, only played Friday, but I know you talked to your friend Evan from NBADraft.net, who was a big fan of his performance.
Yeah, so what Evan, his name is Evan Tom, writes for NBADraft.net, very, like, goes to tons of high school things. He thought, so Moussa Cisse played one game just on Friday, so unfortunately wasn't there for Sean. But what Evan told me is, like, in terms of rim protection and, like, you know, timing as a shot blocker, like, one of the best that he's seen. And great at rebounding. Says that he's starting to shoot a little bit, and that he has, like, a lot of potential in terms of being a rim runner, and well, his offense at this point is rim running and things like that. Needs to work on his ball skills. But yeah, another guy who's one of the top players in 2021.
Yeah, in terms of three other guys kind of caught my, at least caught my eye, or maybe four. So Augustus, man, not even going to try to pronounce it, but Marcelonis from Lithuania, who is Sarunas's
Marcelonis.
Yeah, Marcelonis. Yeah. Kind of a, you know, European style point guard. So he was interesting to watch. Yannick Craig from the Netherlands, 6'7" wing that I think Maryland and a few other schools are looking at. And then there's one other player, Luke Van Sluten, who did not play extremely well in the scrimmages, but there was a few moments where he drove the lane and tried to just dunk it on two or three people. Both one time he missed it, the other time he got fouled. But it was kind of surprising given what you saw from him in warmups, and then all of a sudden he decided to just, you know, explode the basket and rise up off of 1 foot and got pretty high up there and was ready to throw what probably would have been the dunk of the weekend down, and you know, came pretty close. So that kind of caught me off guard. And then one other guy was Brazilian Augusto Cruz de Oliveira Cassia, who did pretty well as well. So overall, it was good to kind of see some of those guys at least put their name in the back of my mind. And I mean, I think we'll be hearing maybe a little bit about some of them next year, but I would say mostly, you know, in 2 years, given how the last Basketball Without Borders in LA played out. So I know you're tracking these guys, and we'll be interested to see when we start talking about them for our mock draft discussions.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I really appreciate the insight you had on even the day going there. I know once you see a prospect, you really get, like, a great insight into what they bring to the table. So I always love hearing your breakdown of these events.
Yeah, unfortunately, it was not as detailed as last time, but hopefully a little something. One other player was one of the Chinese shooting guard in Yangzi Q, 6'5". I thought a very good shooter. and, you know, was able to hold his own. When he did try to attack the basket, that was where his deficiencies came in. But, you know, there's, I think, three or four Chinese players there, and he was the only guard. The other two were big. So I thought he was a kind of a name to track. But, you know, switching back. yes, which you'll be at. So we'll be able to get some more insight on some of the international guys, although I'd probably say what half of them will be, you know, well-known players from the American high school circuit. So with that, we'll switch gears and haven't really chatted a whole lot of NBA, you know, NBA discussion with you in terms of the upcoming draft. And I know you are the draft guru. So I'm curious, you know, just going to kind of throw out a few, maybe like three or four players and just kind of get your thoughts on them. So the first one I want to talk about is Sadiq Bey from Villanova, has been playing very well as of late and has been getting some draft buzz and kind of, I'd say, the, you know, just outside the lottery through the first round. So I'm curious your take on Sadiq, who is, I think, around 6'7", 6'8", and shooting the ball extremely well from outside the three-point line.
Yeah, I've been impressed with what I've seen from him. It seems like, you know, he has some of that defensive acumen, but just as a shooter, he's shooting 46.4% from three-point range, shooting a decent percentage from the line. Doesn't do like a ton off of the bounce, but still seems to have some potential there. Almost like a 2-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. So yeah, he's and then yeah, the physical tools and the athleticism both seem to check out. So yeah, he's been one of the pleasant surprises of guys who have been college returnees, and yeah, just fits that combo forward role really nicely at Villanova right now. And a guy that is one of my favorite returning players in terms of draft prospects this year.
Okay. I guess I'm gonna go a little comparison. So guys that you got to see at the Hoop Summit last year, Cole Anthony and Nico Mannion. I know Nico's been having a better overall year. Some people have Nico starting to appear above Cole, but you got to see Cole kind of take over Nico. I mean, he definitely did so in the McDonald's game, and I think played a little better in the Hoop Summit game, although that was a little more competitive. But I'm curious your thoughts between those two right now.
I actually feel like Nico more than held his own at the Hoop Summit game. I know it was funny in the interview after the game. Cole, they both had great games. And Cole said, oh, you know, it was great to see Nico actually bring it during this game, like kind of something along those lines. So there was a bit of a rivalry between those two. And I'd heard that at Steph Curry camp, Nico got the better of Cole. I still like Cole Anthony a little bit better as an NBA prospect. I just think that, you know, in terms of his pull-up game, and I think his athleticism, like, he's been at the very least like an awesome rebounder. And I just feel like that kind of can possibly translate at the next level to his athleticism, getting him some opportunities, and then maybe playing with the better spacing. Like, as you well know, he doesn't have that right now in college.
Are you saying North Carolina doesn't have good spacing this year?
I'm absolutely saying that. It's been pretty brutal to watch that, and just the shooting in general. And you know, Cole doesn't necessarily help there either. Nico is the better passer and playmaker between the two. Like, I don't think that's much of a question. I think Cole is a better defensive prospect. They're both not amazing in terms of like physical tools, and Nico's not the worst athlete. But I just think Cole's strength and athleticism should be something that kind of helps him more easily translate to the NBA. And I think that his pull-up game and, you know, at least potential as a finisher are two things that should translate better. So I'm still Cole above Nico. I know that people are kind of worried about both of them in terms of, you know, just Nico hasn't necessarily been able to finish shoot as well as people thought, and they worry about his athleticism in terms of an NBA point guard. And, Cole's, like, efficiency this year has been pretty perplexing. And he also has that, you know, negative assist to turnover ratio right now. So,
well, I can't really blame him too much on that, given I know last game, you know, there were several assists ruined, and besides for Garrison Brooks, not a lot of players to pass to on this year's Carolina team, especially out on the perimeter, given I think they're shooting about 28% from three in conference play. So,
yeah.
But, you know, in terms of him, he's shooting, I think, 32% from the three-point line, which is right around what Nico's shooting. So neither one's really lighting it up from behind the arc. I know Cole shot 38% in the EYBL. But, you know, I think Nico has a better, I'd say, first step. I think his first step is a little underrated. So I think he can kind of get into the paint a little easier. But I would think, as you mentioned, that going, you know, in the long term, Cole Anthony's ability to finish would be greater. I mean, he definitely has not finished well and has, you know, struggled to kind of draw, you know, sometimes he does draw the contact and he doesn't get fouled. But, you know, at USA Basketball, he was measured with a max vert of 43. So when he does get going and he is able to jump off of 2 feet, he can get up there. So I think it'll you know, be interesting to see. And, you know, right now Nico is having the better and more efficient year, but, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens once they get into draft workouts.
Different roles. Sorry to interrupt, but very different roles. And one thing I'll say about Cole in terms of, you know, not being able to kind of point to the assist to turnover ratio, I think that's something that's always been kind of an issue with him, and something that, like, even in EYBL, like, he didn't necessarily have the greatest assist to turnover ratio. So decision making, something that you definitely have to look into when you're thinking of Cole Anthony being your primary ball handler potentially.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think that goes back to the overall draft class ability. So I'm curious from your perspective. So right now, there are two players that have been getting, two freshmen that have been getting a lot of love and have been, you know, have seen their names flying up the draft chart. So you have one, Isaac Okoro at Auburn, and then you have Big O from Onyeka Okongwu from USC, who played at Chino Hills and the Ball Brothers for a while. So, you know, I think going into the year, neither one of these guys was really being talked about in terms of being a one and done. You know, looking at 24/7, Okongwu was rated 27, three spots behind Isaiah Mobley, his teammate at USC, and then you had Okoro, who was rated literally one spot behind Will Baker, who just had 20 points against TCU, but before that was getting a lot of DMPs and 2 points per game. So how do two players that are ranked really outside the top 25 turn into potential top 10 picks in such a quick time frame?
I feel with these two guys, there were some questions about, you know, just even the college translation, but they are both, like, two fantastic athletes and have great bodies. And then I like, even the questions with their shooting, they both have answered that by being fantastic around the basket. And with Onyeka Okongwu, it's funny. I'll give a guy I know from draft Twitter credit, Ross Homan. He had those two guys as his number one center and number one going into the year. So there were some people that were a bit ahead of the curve on those guys. And, you know, it's just really paid off. Okoro is a good defender, and then he's been great, like, in many ways, finishing around the basket. Still has some issues shooting, and, you know, needs to, like, work maybe, like, a tad on, like, his handle and things along those lines. But his ability to defend was something that even he was at the Hoop Summit, and he was wonderful there. And I just remember him guarding Jaden McDaniels and totally getting the better of him in the Hoop Summit scrimmage. And then Onyeka Okongwu is a fantastic athlete. He's very strong and has been really good around the basket, like just some great touch, an excellent rebounder, and then great timing as a shot blocker. And also really good moving his feet, like with the potential to switch on defense. So, yeah, I'd say their athleticism and their defensive acumen have been two of the major reasons that those guys are seen as two of the safer picks in the draft right now, potentially.
Yeah, no, definitely appreciate the insight on those guys. I'm curious if you have maybe one or two other guys on kind of your board that – you know, they don't have to be top five or lottery picks, but maybe some other guys that you think will, you know, maybe outplay their ranking or will get drafted a little higher than where they're at right now. I know last year we kept talking about Kobe White being drafted higher than Trey Jones for a while. So who's the Kobe White for this year for you?
It's always hard to say, but I think, a guy that I've always really liked, and maybe that's a little bit of a bias of being able to see him up close and personal, but Josh Green was at the Hoop Summit the last 2 years, and I felt both years he was one of the better players there, just with potential. He really does like seem to have the possibility of being that 3-and-D mold. Very good passer. Very good athlete, and somebody I think a lot of mock drafts have a little too low right now. I know it's been kind of a rocky road for him at times, and he hasn't been the most consistent at Arizona, but I just think his athleticism and unselfishness is going to translate, and I still think that there's some shooting potential there as well. Another player who I know that there's a wide divide on is Tyrese Maxey. I think that he has really good touch. His shooting's been very inconsistent, but I think he has potential there. And then also, like, you know, a smart player, has some versatility as a defender. And yeah, he's another guy that I really like. And I feel like both of those guys could end up going pretty high in the draft.
All right, well, I'm going to go one guy who is definitely going a lot lower, but who is fun to watch and intriguing despite not playing on the best team. I am going back to the ACC, going up in the Northeast, and going with Elijah Hughes from Syracuse.
Yes, sir. Where are you feeling about Elijah?
I really like his shooting ability. I think he's got a good stroke and can shoot it from deep. You know, is athletic enough to get to the basket. And unfortunately for Jim Boeheim, will most likely be departing Syracuse early, because I'm sure he would turn into player of the year material next year. But he's a guy that will most likely leave early. We'll see. And, you know, right now he's projected second round pick, but he's a guy that I think could outplay his ranking. So we'll see. And we can definitely jump a little bit more into the mock drafts as the season ends. And we start to see who's going pro. But in terms of the season, I know we usually like to do a buy sell, but this time we can do some predictions. So, on Saturday, there's three really, really good games, with one being must watch. That would be Kansas at Baylor. So two really top, you know, at least KenPom wise, top three teams overall, top five teams. Kansas has not lost for about, I think, 11 games in a row since they lost to Baylor at home. And Baylor's been just killing the Big 12. So in a matchup of two of the top teams, who are you rolling with at a game at Baylor?
Yeah, right now I'm going to go with Kansas. As like Baylor has been just absolutely ridiculous, and their guard play is fantastic, and they've even gotten some nice defensive play from their bigs. But yeah, I think Kansas kind of has things rolling right now as well. The first game between these two teams was excellent also. And yeah, I feel like Kansas is going to pull the upset. As much as Baylor has won, like, I think 23 games in a row. So yeah, they're really hitting on all cylinders right now. But yeah, this should be a great one. And I'll go with Kansas for the upset here.
All right. Well, I'm going with Kansas as well. I think KenPom has it Baylor by 1 point, so probably not a huge upset. But I think between Dotson and Azubuike, that those guys will find a way to get it done. I think on Saturday, two of the other top games, at least from a ranking standpoint, we have the Arizona-Oregon rematch, which I know you'll be watching, and then Gonzaga goes and plays at BYU. So that'll probably be Gonzaga's last big test until the West Coast Conference finals, most likely. So we'll be interesting to watching them in a pretty tight atmosphere. One game that was most likely supposed to be a top-notch game is UNC at Louisville, but right now you have one of the top teams in the ACC versus one of the worst teams. That being said, I wouldn't be surprised if UNC plays them pretty close, given their ability to play pretty well and then lose on a last second shot in three of their last four games. But Louisville.
I'm glad you said it.
Louisville's a team I haven't watched a whole lot of. They haven't been that enthralling to me to turn on and watch them. So looking forward to getting to see them a little more in depth on Saturday. And then, on Sunday, kind of there's Maryland, Ohio State, two ranked teams, but Penn State, Indiana is kind of intriguing to me. So a lot of good college hoops going on this weekend, especially early on Saturday with the Baylor Kansas game, and a lot more for us to discuss as we go forward. But with that, are there any final college basketball thoughts from you?
Not as much college basketball as I will say the Hoop Summit. You have three of your boys from Carolina making the USA roster. I don't think we ever talked about this, but yeah, they announced the US roster, and you have Walker Kessler, De'Ron Sharp, and Caleb Love.
Yeah, so out of those three, I assume you were surprised by one or two of them.
I was at least surprised by Kessler because he wasn't at the camp, and I thought they might go with somebody else who was there, or maybe some other possibly more highly ranked player, even though Kessler is a McDonald's All-American. But yeah, he's been to USA basketball camp before, I believe, in July. And yeah, if you're part of that program, you definitely have a chance. And yeah, I'm just I was the guy I was surprised that didn't make the team. I love Keon Johnson at the USA basketball camp, but Greg Brown I thought would be a very fun guy to watch in that, because he is like the most ridiculous dunker of anybody there, and also a solid prospect. So yeah, I was a little surprised he didn't make the final cut.
Yeah, I would agree with you on Greg Brown, just given his athleticism and going back to USA basketball in October. As you said, he was throwing down the most ridiculous dunks. I think he played on that championship team.
Oh yeah,
and
he was so good.
You know, had a good run, and then you had Kessler who missed that due to injury, and you know, it'll be interesting to see how he plays. But they probably needed another big guy. They're loaded at the guard spot. I think, you know, in practices it'll be fun to watch. Really, a lot of the positional groups compete against each other. You have Jalen Suggs and Jeremy Roach, and then Adam Miller as well as Caleb Love. So you know, those guys will be a treat to watch. And then just kind of from the guard wing spots between you have Scotty Barnes and Christopher and Kate Cunningham, Jalen Green, Zaire Williams. So you know, you're loaded at the wing spot. And then the bigs will be interesting between Evan Mobley, who everybody loves, very quick off his feet, and then De'Ron Sharpe, who's more of kind of a bruiser, but a guy who's been getting better rapidly over the last 2 years to go with Kessler. So I think for you it'll be nice getting to watch those practices.
Yeah, I'm really excited, and I'm hoping they make a nice world team to possibly compete with them. But you look at that roster and it's going to be tough. Like the wings that you're naming, the point guards, like that's going to be a team that it's going to be really fun if they do go small and maybe play like Scotty Barnes at the five at some points as well. Like, you know, just kind of like what Montverde is actually doing this year. So yeah, you know, it's funny because they have Sharp, but if they go small with Barnes, like they can really, really run and then have a bunch of ball handlers as well. So pretty cool.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they divvy up playing time, but should definitely be a talented one. And then you have the McDonald's All-American game before that. So, you know, there's usually one guy that plays out of his mind that, you know, in Brandon Ingram's case, he was able to get put on the Hoop Summit roster. I think it was due to an injury from Henry Ellenson. But then, you know, you had Nas Little a few years ago play really well at McDonald's and, you know, did not get invited to the Hoop Summit. So yeah. It'll be interesting to see if maybe one addition is made, if there are any injuries or anything like that. But should be interesting. And this weekend should be very interesting as well. So a lot of college hoops, high school hoops, and didn't really talk NBA, but got to talk some mock drafts. So with that, we'll thank you for coming on, and looking forward to chatting again soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Sean, as always.
No problem. And with that wraps up another edition of the Sean Moe Hoops Pod. College basketball season is rapidly coming to an end, and March Madness is just a few weeks away. So looking forward to diving into some of the tournament teams and sleepers that will emerge with how chaotic we're all expecting March Madness to be. So with that, we'll see you guys next week.